Welcome to On Deadline, your radio news from Odyssey newsrooms across the country. I'm Christy Strausser, Odyssey's managing editor of news. Best case scenario, every employer wants healthy employees with a fantastic work-life balance. But what happens when people take so much time off to take care of themselves that everyone else suffers? Here's KCBS in the Bay Area.
More and more people are using leave of absences from work for mental health reasons, and those absences are causing some workplace strain. Bloomberg's Taylor Nicole Rogers, thank you so much for being with us. What's going on here?
Well, after the pandemic, a lot of companies spent time educating their staff about all of the different things they could do to take care of their mental health. And it seems like now they have some buyer's remorse after there has been a huge spike in the number of people that are taking leaves of absences of 8 to 12 weeks to treat things like anxiety or depression.
Now, tell me who's taking these. Is there an age disparity when it comes to employees looking up for mental health benefits, or is it across the board?
It is across the board. And what I think is surprising to bosses right now is that it is people who seemed to be okay are calling out and saying, I need a month or two off.
And this is under FMLA or not?
It is. FMLA, the Family Medical Leave Act, is a law that we typically think of being for parental leave or, you know, medical leave for something like cancer, but more people are using it to take care of their mental health. And unlike those other situations, they don't often give their bosses a few weeks of heads up.
Okay, now FMLA, I'm familiar with having taken it myself, you have to have a doctor's note in many cases. So are these people getting a doctor's note to be able to take this mental health leave?
They are. And I did speak to a therapist who said that everyone that has asked her for one definitely needed it, but employers are skeptical because there are telemedicine services that offer these notes for $49 and you can get them on a Zoom call in less than a day.
Okay, so is it being abused?
That is an open question. A lot of experts say it is not, but bosses are skeptical. There have been some TikTok videos floating around where people are saying, take your FMLA time and go on vacation, or if you hate your job, file for FMLA and then just use that 4 or 6 or 8 weeks to search for a new one.
So I do know, I can think of in past cases of some people who have used FMLA, you know, that have had substance abuse, you know, like for rehab. I've heard of that.
Absolutely.
And, you know, so there's a difference between that and someone who needs, say, cognitive behavioral therapy. So are you saying that people are probably using it for some cognitive behavioral therapy that could be done or dealt with on their own time?
The law actually does not say anything about how you have to use the time off. So there are people who are using it for the type of therapy appointments that other people squeeze in before or after work. And there are other people who say that they're burnt out and they need to take time to travel.
So how are companies handling the resource gap?
That is something that they're still trying to figure out. Some companies are contracting with other companies that will kind of evaluate requests and try to direct workers to other resources like cognitive behavioral therapy, like support groups if they're dealing with grief and things like that. And other companies are going all in on mental health resources in the office to try to catch these problems before they get to that point. So we're seeing a lot more companies bring therapists on staff and ready to meet with workers throughout the day or investing in apps that allow you to get therapy by text message or meditation apps, things like that.
Can you quantify the increase that's been seen?
Yes. So there was a survey by the law firm Littler Bittleson, and they found that 67% of employers said that they had an increase in the number of requests for leaves of absence or other accommodations for mental health just last year.
That's amazing. Now, the tools that you mentioned in the previous question of things, some of the things that the companies can do, that those all seem very helpful.
They are. And it doesn't stop there. There are meditation apps. There are lots of different types of group therapy that companies could offer. And so I think the goal is that you can catch these mental health problems before they get to the point where you need to take time off. And I think a lot of workers would like that too.
Do you see these interventions as a way to maybe bring those numbers down to the people who are taking leave?
That's the goal. I did speak with companies that said that it seems to be working out for them. So we'll definitely have to see as more and more companies invest in things like in-office therapy sessions.
Here's Jason DeRusha at WCCO in Minneapolis with more on lengthy leaves from work.
I do not know what to make of Minnesota's new family leave program. 6 months in, we have a look at how many people are applying for this benefit. At first, my reaction is that, I mean, I sure wish I got this much time off when my wife was pregnant. I want your input, and I especially would like to hear what your experience has been. Do you own a business where you've had to figure out, like, gosh, now I got, you know, a bunch of people going on leave? I have a number of examples that I've been gathering on social media. We reported on this in our news, and it was my gut reaction, I think, was like a lot of yours. This idea where the state expected in the first 6 months of this new program, and this program gives you up to 20 weeks of leave for pregnancy, for caring for a relative, for illness or injury, all sorts of stuff. It's sort of a state insurance program where the premiums for it come through a almost 0.9% payroll tax. So it's coming out of your check. Your employer might be paying some of it. You might be paying some of it. And the state gets this premium money, but then they've also funded this program so they can pay out a portion of your pay. So you could take, you know, your wife has a baby. You as the guy were, of course, the hero of that interaction as the father, and your wife, who has spent almost 10 months carrying that child to term. You both get the same amount of time off. I know, bonding. Oh, yeah. Okay. Okay, old guy. Like, yes. But you could take 20 weeks of paid leave courtesy of this program. For many, I bet this program has been amazing. Perhaps you work at an employee, an employer that doesn't have leave. And the truth is, I think the stats from around the country is something, you know, fewer than 30% of people have any sort of real leave program at their job. That's a lot of people who just end up going without pay, right? You get hurt, you go without pay. My sister has a chronic illness. She lives in Illinois. She uses her sick time. Boom. It's gone. And then she has to take paid leave, unpaid leave, rather. If she lived in Minnesota, she would be eligible to take 20 weeks of leave. What makes it difficult to know how to feel about it is the state reported out that about 145,000 people applied for paid leave and around 75,000 applications were granted. Now, I have reached out to the state to try to get some clarity. Does that mean almost 50,000 people were denied because they were trying to scam the system? Or does it mean like those folks were, they had incomplete paperwork, whatever? It's hard to know if this thing is working or if this thing is not. It's hard to know. And that's why I'm asking for your input. One texter saying, thank you for asking for input. I'm a small business owner of a very small company, and I think this is absolutely outrageous. That goes in line with some of the comments I got on social media from people who are dealing with this program. So, for example, MN Pop-Tart says, it has cost my company $80,000 in new taxes through Q2. That's not including the cost to replace employees on leave. I think at the most fundamental level, we look at this and say, people who need to care for a loved one or people who are post-surgery or post-injury, we do want them to have some paid leave so we can take care of each other. At the same time, another response says, on a small team of eight, so imagine this, a company with just eight people, three have gone out on paid family medical leave, two at the same time. That's put a lot of strain on the rest of us. This Midwest Unity on X says, I know 100% that one of those employees went on vacation. 1 week after coming back, she quit via text. So here is the danger, and I guess here is my challenge to you. We know there is going to be a certain amount of fraud. We know there are a certain number of people who are going to take advantage of the system. Welcome to life. Rich people take advantage of the system by trying to dodge taxes. Some ding-dong that works next to you in the office takes advantage of the system by calling in sick and using their sick days when they're not sick. So life has a certain amount of this. I am not ready to pronounce an entire program garbage or fraud because we can come up with some example. That said, we don't have the best track record in this state at setting up a system that protects against the fraud. So it's difficult to know what to do.
Going to work or not is obviously a major financial decision for most of us. But what about the smaller money matters that pile up around us every day? Here's Rob Hart in Chicago.
The biggest financial successes often begin with small daily decisions that quietly compound into greater wealth and long-term financial security. With us to explain is Sandy Brager, Chief Client Officer at Experient in San Francisco. Sandy, thank you for joining us today. And it really is a cliche when you say the little things in life make a big difference, but the reality is those little decisions can really add up.
It is so true, Rob. And yeah, money habits are just like money in terms of their ability to help you compound and grow your nest egg over time. And really, when it comes to these small actions, the best place to start is with your goals. You want to be really clear. What are you trying to achieve? Are you trying to pay down a credit card loan? Are you trying to boost your retirement savings to take advantage of your employer match? Are you trying to save up money for a down payment on a new home? Whatever the goal is, visualize it, see yourself achieving that goal, and focus on what it's going to feel like to achieve that goal. All of that's going to help you build little habits to get you there.
And let's start with some of those small habits. That includes automated saving. And in the immortal words of Ron Popeil, automate your savings so you can set it and forget it. And then a couple of years down the road, you can look at how much the miracle of compound interest has been able to do its thing.
That's right. That's right. So for many people who are employed and have an opportunity to contribute to a retirement plan that their employer sets up, they're probably doing this, right? People who contribute to 401k plans make an election. And that money comes out of their paycheck before they even have a chance to spend it. That's a really great automated savings tip. And you don't have to have a 401k plan to be able to do that. You could set up an IRA. You could set up any sort of investment or savings account and through your bank create a automatic monthly transfer. And getting that money out of your spending account before you even have a chance to spend it can really be helpful, especially on a compounding basis over time.
And then when we talk about socking a little bit of money away, of course, most of us are familiar with a deduction out of our paycheck going into a retirement account. That retirement account is administered by a professional, and it grows faster than the rate of inflation, fingers crossed. But if you're trying to just automate saving, just setting money aside, not for retirement, what can you do, whether it's a savings account or a brokerage account, to make sure that that money grows at a rate faster than inflation?
Yeah, so you'll want to be doing the same thing, have that automated transfer from your checking account into the savings account or into the investment account. If you're trying to beat inflation, you likely need to make some investments over the long term, and the investments that you choose should be based on the time horizon for your spending goal. And, you know, there's a lot of advisors and other resources available to help guide you. But you do want to think about taking some investment risk, especially with inflation at the rate that it is today.
What makes more sense, a high yield savings account or just throwing it into a S&P 500 index fund?
Yeah, again, it depends on what your goal is and what your time horizon is. If you have time to ride out the volatility of the stock market, meaning that you're going to be investing for, say, 5+ years, then investing in stocks might make a lot of sense. And the S&P 500 could be a place to start, but you might want to broaden it out and think about investing more globally and also investing in some of the smaller stocks in the United States to give yourself further diversification. But the key is to make sure that you know that time horizon, because if you're saving for something that you want to purchase in the next year, you might be better off in that high yield savings account because you know that money will be there when you need it a year from now.
One little thing you can also take care of outside of just automating your saving is go through all of those subscriptions that you have to various streaming services. You could very well still be paying for a streaming service that was carrying an NFL playoff game 3 years ago. You subscribe so you could see Taylor and Travis, and now you're still paying for it. So audit those subscriptions.
Absolutely. You want to audit all of your spending to see what's happening under the hood. Is the spending that you've set up, especially those subscriptions, are they still serving you? If they're not, cut them off. When you stop subscribing, that might be an automatic great way to divert that money into the savings for that goal that you have in mind.
After work, happy hour is a small decision, depending on how often you do it. But are more of us enjoying it these days? Here's more with Rob Hart.
Restaurants are reinventing happy hour with expanded food specials, earlier hours, and value-focused promotions designed to attract budget-conscious diners and boost weekday business. Izzy Karish, president of Hospitality Works, a.k.a. the restaurant coach in Chicago. When it comes to the resurrection or the comeback of happy hour, is it driven by budget-conscious consumers, or is it driven by the fact there are now just enough office workers downtown to make it work?
Well, it's a little bit of both, but certainly it is the people coming back into downtown to work that's driving at least the idea of happy hour. You know, so before COVID, happy hour was always 4 to 6 or 5 to 7, you know, something at the end of the workday. But now that people are coming back to work all these years, after the pandemic, the times for people in the office has changed, and restaurants and bars are getting smarter, looking at the reality and saying, you know what, we need to have happy hour from 1 to 3, because that's when the people who work downtown at a lot of our local places, that's when they come, and their end of the day is 1 o'clock. Other people, it's still 4 o'clock. So being flexible is the one thing that is bringing happy hour back.
And it's not necessarily on that subject of flexibility. It's no longer just drink specials, have a couple of cheap cocktails and weave to the train. It's expanding food offerings. It's making it almost a mini dinner, and also expanding your offerings to attract the sober curious customer.
Absolutely. Happy hour today is not defined really by alcohol. A lot of restaurants and bars will have happy hour. And what does that mean? 50% off appetizers or complimentary appetizer with your, you know, first cocktail. But it's often the food today more than alcohol that's driving happy hour.
And then also, is it just people after so many years of communicating with your coworkers via Zoom or Microsoft Teams or just remotely, do people really crave that human connection once again? And does happy hour allow that to happen?
Well, it does. And again, you know, before COVID, happy hour always meant a cocktail after work, and you really were going to have that cocktail in a bar while you waited traffic out. So 5 o'clock till 6:37. Hey, I'm going to hop in my car, and I'll have missed traffic. But today, you know, having happy hour at 1 o'clock and focusing on the food piece or the non-alcohol piece, that really is a time for people to get together. They haven't been together. They're finally getting back into the office. And an early happy hour is a great way to reconnect in a way that you haven't in a number of years.
Thank you for listening to On Deadline, your radio news from Odyssey. On Deadline is written and produced by me, Christy Strasser, and by Lauren Barry. Subscribe wherever you get podcasts.